but I propose later to mention some curious happenings connected with two of them which struck me at the time as first-rate evidence of spirit power. See Nos. 80 and 81. I have referred to three test letters, two with lithium ink, on my first visit to Chicago, and one with ordinary ink, on my second visit. In the first of these letters there was a postscript from my guide Iola, alluding to some chaff that had taken place during that particular sitting. I had spoken to May Bangs, the only other person in the room, about some misspelt words in a previous letter which was also written by my guide or at her dictation, and the alleged writer vigorously defended herself. The doors of the room were always closed. Again, when we sat for the last of the three letters, that on February 27, 1909, May Bangs asked me to cut off a small piece of wood, point it, and put it between the slates where the letter reposed. She thought the invisible writer would make use of it for his script. When the letter was finished, I was told not to open it. It was addressed across the flap to Sir William Crookes, F.R.S. When it was opened by him in London, he found my piece of pointed wood inside the letter. It had been dipped in ink, and one word at the beginning had actually been written with this blunt instrument. The letter itself was feeble. The concomitant evidence of the fact that no mortal had anything to do with the replies to my letters is strong. Several times references were made to conversations that took place across the table while the writings were in progress. The following incidents will suffice to close the subject. 79 on Wednesday, March 3rd, from 11.15 a.m. to 12.15 p.m., I sat with May Bangs for a reply from Hypatia. During the sitting I told the medium that some gentlemen in England had discussed with me the possibility of discovering if the ink on the slates was the identical ink used in the replies, by measuring the diminution of ink in the pot. My opinion was that we could not determine the question in this way, and May Bangs agreed with me. We were not using slates on this occasion, but had put the sealed letter under a stretched canvas. This was covered over by a cloth tucked in all round, and the ink was on top, not covered up. Immediately after Mary Bangs spoke, her hands were quite 3 feet from the ink, and we were sitting in full light. The ink fell in the pot. When the reply was finished, I found a communication from my guide outside the envelope referring to a matter, not the ink, which the psychic and I had been discussing a few minutes before. When I took away my letter, I was directed, through taps on the slates, to bring some flowers in the afternoon. I must mention here that, after I began bringing my own materials, the slates used for communications by taps from the unseen were the Bangs' own slates. It is very necessary to make this clear, for the casual reader might suppose that the psychic and I held the slates which contained the sealed letter. 80 At 4 p.m. of the same day I returned with another sealed letter, a tea rosebud, and two pink carnations. These flowers I put into a glass vase 9 inches high, nearly full of water. May Bangs and I sat for the reply to my letter at 5.10. It was broad daylight. My letter was under a stretched canvas, which was covered over with a red cloth tucked in all round. On top of it I placed my own little open tin pot full of common ink, bought in Van Buren Street 2 hours before, and the corked ink bottle. The rosebud opened soon after we sat down. At 5.30 the flowers began to jump about spasmodically in the vase, and worked themselves halfway round the rim. At 5.35 the tea rose and one carnation were pulled down by invisible power towards the letter. Constant commotion was going on with the flowers in the water. Ultimately the rose nearly wriggled itself out of the glass vase. At 5.40 I said, I never heard of any phenomenon of this kind being done if the eyes of the observers were concentrated on the object. The Bangs' slates were held between us, and the message rapped out, look out of the window. We both turned our heads simultaneously towards the window. Instantly the vase upset away from the letter. The water was thrown upon the carpet, where it soon dried up, and the flowers disappeared. At 5.42, as the light in the room was fading, I asked May Bangs to light the gas behind her. The window blind was still kept up. At 5.48 my little pot of ink was nearly empty. I filled it up, by request, from the parent ink bottle. At 5.52 the ink bubbled away again. The pot being empty, I filled it up a third time. We were then told by impression, or by taps on the slate, to examine the parent bottle. I put some of the liquid in it on a piece of paper, and found that the essence had been extracted from it and that it was very watery. And lower, at 6.0 it was dry. I filled it up for the fourth time. At 6.5 taps announced that the letter was finished. On the outside of the envelope was written, "The remaining pink I claim to take with me, Iola." I slid open the letter at the top, and found inside the envelope, A, my letter, B, reply of 6 pages, in which there was an allusion to the flower phenomenon described above, C, the tea rose, 1 carnation, and some leaves. Not a sign could I find in the room of the second carnation. I poured the ink from the little pot back into the ink bottle, and again examined the contents of the bottle. There was nothing but dirty water. All the essence of the ink had been extracted, and an entire 5-cent bottle of ink had been consumed in one sitting. On the evening of March 5, 1909, I took a tea rose, a carnation, and a letter to the Bangs house. I wanted the flowers to be taken away by Iola as my parting present, for the next day I was leaving for England. If the Invisibles could accomplish what they had done the previous evening, they would certainly be able to dematerialize these flowers. I was not disappointed, but the phenomenon was, in a measure, spoiled by the nervousness of May Bangs. I had frequently observed her lightheadedness in the evening on previous occasions. She was probably overworked. All psychics have their limitations, and possibly I ought to have known that such a delicate phenomenon should not have been started after a hard day's work. The flowers were placed in water in the same glass vase as was used before, and the vase put in the same position on the table, the letter being under a stretched canvas as before. At 7.42 we sat for a reply to the letter, and with the hope that the flowers might be dematerialized. 81, at 8.0 the flowers began to shiver and jump a little, the water bubbling in the glass. The gas jet was lowered and shaded from the vase, but there was enough light to see each other quite distinctly and all objects in the room. From the first the psychic fixed her eyes on the vase. I begged of her to become less concentrated, as I feared a failure. By and by the rose lifted itself out of the glass, and May Bangs, apparently unable to control herself, reached forward and, with her hand, dashed it back into the glass with an excited gesture. I thought the experiment had failed, but no, the two flowers still showed signs of animation, and kept on waggling to and fro, and apparently becoming smaller. I seized the glass vase with my left hand for some minutes. A message came by impression through May Bangs. Put the vase on your side of the shelf of the table. At 8.15 I placed it almost touching my right leg under the table, on the shelf, well out of sight and reach of the psychic. At 8.20 May Bangs opened a door and shouted for her sister Lizzie to come into the room to assist by her power. At 8.28 a message came to turn up the light, which was done by May Bangs. I lifted the vase. The water was there, but the flowers had disappeared. At 8.31 the usual taps announced that the reply to the letter was finished. The little pot, this time underneath the frame, was examined, and all the ink in it had dried up. This was the only manifestation which occurred in partial light during my intercourse with the two sisters. All the others took place in full light. The nervousness and want of self-control of May Bangs on this occasion, when a fine manifestation was partially spoilt, may be accounted for by an incident that took place late in the afternoon, and which must have taxed the mediumistic powers of the two sisters to the utmost. Two farmers from Oregon had come to the house between 4 and 5 o'clock. One brought a photograph with him into the room in his pocket, and asked that a portrait of his deceased wife might be precipitated. The other accompanied him to the sitting, as a friend, intending to ask for a precipitated portrait of his deceased wife if that of his companion should prove to be a success. He left his photograph in his overcoat pocket, in the hall. Two canvases were produced, and the sitting commenced. In a short time the face and bust of a woman appeared. They were those of an apparently refined person, with delicate dress and etherealized countenance. The man watched it with undisguised impatience, and, when it was nearly finished, exclaimed, "That's not my wife. If I take that picture home, My daughters will say that is not their mother. Immediately the picture faded away. Two more canvases were set up, and another face and bust in due time appeared. After watching their development for some 10 minutes, the man said to his friend, who, remember, had not disclosed his intention of asking for a precipitation, "Bill, that's not my wife, that's your wife. I could have told you that some time ago," was the reply. The development went on till this portrait was finished to the complete satisfaction of the husband, and the picture was laid on one side on a chair. "Now," said the psychics to the first man, who had been disappointed, "we will try again to obtain for you a precipitation of your wife as she was in earth life." Canvases were set up as before, this time not in the window, for it had become dark, and presently a face and bust of his wife developed, precisely as in the photograph which he had brought into the room. It was now about 6.40 or 6.50, and I came to the house. May Bangs opened the door for me, and begged me to come into the séance room to see what had happened. On going in, I was confronted by the picture of what appeared to me to be a man, a friar. Fortunately, I said nothing to betray my belief in the sex of the person whose portrait was before me. I had a short conversation with the two men. Both were highly pleased at their success in obtaining good portraits of their wives just as they were in earth life. They accepted the pictures, and went away delighted. In recent times no psychics have been so long and so constantly under fire of criticism as the Bangs sisters. I record the fact, but entirely without surprise. The manifestations which appear through their mediumship are of such a startling nature as to render it in the highest degree improbable that anyone, however experienced he may be as an investigator, can credit the accounts of what takes place, unless he has actually seen the various phenomena that occur. Many have been the efforts to show that what happens in their presence is the effect of pure conjuring on their own part. All have failed. It was for some years supposed by critics that pictures were prepared beforehand, and concealed by a chemical process, the envelope, so to speak, disappearing on exposure to light. It is now quite certain that such a process does not exist. No painting of the substance of the Bangs pictures can be covered over so as to be invisible. The only possible means of fraud is to substitute a ready-made picture for the second canvas, that furthest from the sitter, and then bring it by degrees slowly to approach the first canvas, that next to the sitter. Even if this were done, we have not got very far, for the finished portrait eventually is found on the further side of the canvas which is next to the sitter. To achieve this it would be necessary to turn both canvases together right round. How, in the name of common sense, could this be done without the sitter, who is between the two mediums, detecting the swindle? But there are two considerations which clinch the matter. A. Where a big picture is concerned, such as Cleopatra, which measures 40 inches by 30 inches, the only possible means of making the alleged substitution is through the window, and the window is never opened. I have been left alone in the room for an hour at a time, and have examined it. It is a burglar-proof sash window, the two halves lifting up and down in the usual way. Moreover, it would be impossible for the sitter to be ignorant of the opening of the window, especially in winter, for it is only 2 feet 9 inches from him. It would also be impossible for him to be blind to the shadow that the alleged substituted picture would throw upon the other canvas or canvases. B. Under these supposed fraudulent conditions, how could the likeness be obtained? The second picture of Iola produced is a faithful, though etherealized, portrait of her at about the age she passed over. It is true the photograph which most resembles this picture was in my dollar pocket, inside my waistcoat, but the psychics could not, and did not, see it normally. I am confident that no fraud was practiced on me by these sisters. This being so, I pass on to this important question: what part do the psychics take in the process of precipitation? As mediums they assuredly have their allotted share. I believe they, or one of them, are mirrors. They are clairvoyants, and do see the photograph in my pocket, and it is through them that the invisible artists are able to get the likeness. The spirit is present, no doubt, but the artist is much assisted by the photo. Mr. William Marriott, the conjurer, has made a study of these Bangs pictures, and has cut strips from the corner of one of my portraits of Iola. He finds that the material basis is tempera, and this is worked upon with pastel, chalk, paint, and airbrush. If these are not the identical materials, they are, at any rate, the nearest counterpart to those which were used by the Invisibles at Chicago. We had two important experiments in December, 1909, to ascertain if he could copy the Bang's manifestations without his methods, admittedly conjuring, being detected. Both were clever and amusing attempts, but unsuccessful. He proved this, however, that a rough picture can be made in the space of 1.5 hours from the time of possessing himself of the photograph, and that a very good finished portrait in freehand can be accomplished in 2 working days. The theory of fraud set up to account for the replies to letters in sealed envelopes is that the letter is got out from between the slates or from under the stretched frame, passed out of the closed room under a door, opened, answered normally by Lizzie Bangs or some other confederate, and returned the same way. The ink is likewise conveyed from the room. I say that, under the circumstances in which I sat with May Bangs, such a feat of conjuring was impossible. In 8 cases out of 12 she had no opportunity of touching the letters or the ink. Any attempt to tamper with slates, stretched canvas, or ink would have resulted in the spilling of the ink. Sometimes I used 5 rubber bands, on 3 occasions the ink was in sight, and only 1 foot or 15 inches from me. In all cases the slates or stretched canvas were nearer to me than to the psychic. For the moment, however, let us suppose that this was the modus operandi. We have yet to account for allusions in the letters to conversations at the table during the séance, and to the knowledge possessed by May Bangs, the only other person in the room, of the contents of my letter. In at least 6 cases she told me the chief points, sometimes everything, of my own script while we were sitting at the table. The Bangs are not always successful. As far as I could judge, the phenomena generally occurred when the sitter was positive, like myself, a person wholly devoid of any receptive mediumistic faculty. Their time is fully occupied. I was only one of many visitors. They offered every facility for examination of the premises, and I roamed through their rooms alone for at least 1/4 hour, on the average, every day that I was in Chicago. Chapter 8. Etherealizations and the Direct Voice, the Knowledge of Immortality for $1, Mrs. Rhett, Method of Her Seances, a brother officer identifies himself, Iola speaks, and refers to a Johnson seance, Josephine, Mr. Henry Clay Hodges accompanies me to a seance, the late British Consul General for Cuba manifests, obvious difference between American and English spirits, over anxiety to communicate prevents manifestation. Sir W. W. identifies himself, Dr. Sharp, Mrs. Rhett's control, speaks clearly at every seance, Commander Scott Wilcox manifests, my guide tells me what I was doing the previous day, this happens several times, the pale lavender dress, a child grown up in spirit life, the spirit of Captain Carver, R. N. The spirit of Captain Andrew Balfour, R. N. Iola and my brother-in-law, Mr. Kaiser, Dr. Kurgan speaks, Tim, from Johnson's cabinet, people of different degrees of spiritual advancement can live together in the spheres, buildings formed by concentration of the vibrations, Dr. Thomson J. Hudson manifests, Hester and William Hudson, the psychic and Dr. Jenkins speak at the same time, a spirit purporting to be Sir Isaac Newton, Dr. Richard Hodgson manifests, good test of identity, Madame Julien de Limont, President Lincoln seen behind me. During my investigations into the phenomena of spiritism I have never met with anyone whose mediumship has brought me so close to the next state of consciousness as Mrs. Rhett, of Detroit, Michigan. I dislike introducing the subject of money into dissertations on communication with the unseen, but psychics must live, and there is just as much reason why they should be paid as parsons, lawyers, artists, doctors, or naval and military officers. Theirs is an exhausting occupation, and generally unfits them for any other. It is due to Mrs. Rhett and to the Johnsons to say that they reduce their charges to a minimum. In each case the fee is $1 if the seance is successful, if unsuccessful, these psychics refuse to receive anything at all. Mrs. Rhett lives in a detached wooden villa of her own design, 414 Baldwin Avenue, in a suburb of Detroit, nearly 3 miles from the City Hall. She is much sought after, and always busy. On an average, she receives 4 or 5 people a day. To ensure seeing her, it is therefore necessary to make an appointment beforehand. She does not fall into trance, and often joins in the conversation going on between the sitter and her spirit visitor. She speaks sometimes at the same instant as her control or the other spirits. I have been much puzzled to know what she has to do with the manifestations. All I am really sure about is that her presence is essential. The phenomena that occur are etherealizations and the direct voice through the trumpet. The former are more rare than the latter. It is possible to hear the voices through the trumpet in broad daylight or gaslight, but the operation is slow and unsatisfactory, and the investigator will find it best to sit in total darkness. The psychic is willing to sit anywhere in the room, the spot being chosen by the investigator, on either side of him, touching him, or opposite to him. I found it best to have her opposite to me, and distant 3 to 4 feet away. The trumpet is placed upright on the floor, between psychic and visitor. I will proceed to describe my sittings. January 6, 1909, 5:10 p.m. Tried first in gaslight, putting the small end of the trumpet to my ear. There were undoubtedly voices in the tube, but I could only catch the names William Roger Drake and Mariella. Cars were passing the house at intervals of 3 minutes, and it was impossible to obtain a perfectly quiet time. Unfortunately, I had called just when the workmen were leaving the city for their homes. Mrs. Rhett was impressed with the following messages from a spirit called Mary. Thomas is here, and Joan of Arc is one of our guides. The names apostrophe Drake, apostrophe Mary, and apostrophe Thomas were quite familiar to me, as those of friends who had passed over many years ago. I do not know any Ella, and Drake's Christian names are wrong. Mary and Thomas are brother and sister. This sitting was a failure. But, at the invitation of the psychic, I returned at 8:15 p.m. to join a party who were booked for that time. 82. The circle consisted of a Mr. and Mrs. Smith, a relative of theirs, a Mr. Andrews, the psychic, and myself. The trumpet was placed in the middle of the circle. We sang a little, and a voice from the trumpet joined in. This was the chief control. Dr. Sharp. A spirit then came to Mr. Andrews, speaking in low tones through the trumpet. She was related also to Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and was fully identified. Then came to me an old brother officer, Captain W. W. P., who identified himself satisfactorily, and spoke of the last materialization seance at which I had seen him. This was at Binner, near Harrow. The curious thing about this communication was that the spirit said it was in Buckinghamshire we had met, whereas it was in a village 2 or 3 miles outside the limit of that county. I reminded him of a certain action of his that had enabled me to satisfy myself of his identity on that occasion. He said, yes, that was my adieu. Correct. He disappeared directly afterwards. After this, the former spirit held a long conversation with her friends. I heard them plying her with various questions, among others, what they had been doing that afternoon. They assured me later that all their questions had been answered correctly. The next spirit to manifest was Iola, who gave her Christian names, and also the name of a relative to us both, who had passed over 55 years before, as a child. She also gave my name, and referred to a seance of a few days before at the Johnsons at Toledo, saying, did you see mother? Q. You could not speak? A. No. But I held out my hands. Correct. Josephine spoke. Correct. Forms were seen clairvoyantly trying to build up, but none succeeded. It was a convincing seance, though in the dark, and I was satisfied that Mrs. Rhett was a medium of remarkable power. The atmospheric conditions were of the best, freezing, dry, and clear. I understood that Mr. and Mrs. Smith had sat with this psychic before, but not for some time. Mr. Andrews had not met her before. 83, January 8, 1909. 11:10 to 12:10. With Mrs. Rhett alone, in the dark. Conditions excellent, freezing, dry, and clear. About 15 minutes after the light was extinguished, I saw a faintly lighted cloud hovering about between the psychic and myself. This gradually developed into the full face of man. I did not recognize it, but discovered later from Dr. Sharp, the control, that the name was George. The appearance of the etherealization was similar to that we are accustomed to see in Sir Herbert Tree's play when the ghost of Caesar appears to Brutus. The next two phantoms were those of relatives, one of whom passed over 18 years ago, the other 6 years. The fourth was the mysterious Josephine, who bad come to me at a Johnson seance at Toledo. I asked her why she attached herself to me, and she answered through the trumpet, while still in sight, to help you, in loving kindness. This was the only time I had seen a form speaking with trumpet, and it reminded me of old medieval pictures. The spirit said Iola was with her. I thanked her for assisting Iola, when she said, "It is she who assists me." I learned later that she was a spirit healer. The etherealizations came to an end, and for the rest of the seance the spirits spoke through the trumpet in the dark. After the disappearance of Josephine, Iola spoke for some time, first giving her two Christian names correctly. She answered several questions, and described minutely and accurately what she had seen me doing at a certain time on the previous day. One reply struck me as most curious. I had asked her where she lived in her childhood, and she replied Torrington, faintly. Q. What was the name of the square? A. Torrington. Now, the fact is she lived in the next square to Torrington Square, in London. This is like the W. W. P. case. He did not materialize in Buckinghamshire, but a few miles off, in Middlesex. This often happens in spirit communication, but the reason of it is difficult to fathom. Surely it would be more natural for Iola to remember the name of her own square than that of the neighboring one. I need hardly remind the reader that Mrs. Rhett knew nothing whatever, normally, of me or my family or friends. She had never been to England, and the idea of her being able to distinguish between two squares in London or two counties may be regarded as pre-soft-posterous. The above-mentioned George talked with me for a short time, and Dr. Sharp, the control, spoke for some minutes. His voice was as loud as that of a mortal, and he appeared sometimes to dispense with the assistance of the trumpet. He answered several questions, principally about my guide. I may say here that none of the voices can be identified as those of the friends who purport to be present, but the only voice which resembled that of the psychic was Josephine's. The operation is like communicating with a relative or friend through a long-distance telephone. January 9, 1909, 1.40 to 2.40 p.m. 84, I was accompanied by the veteran spiritualist Mr. Henry Clay Hodges, editor of the Stellar Ray, also 2,000 Years of Celestial Life, by Clytina, and Science and Key of Life, by Alvides. Atmospheric conditions were not so good as on the previous day, it was snowing. After talking between ourselves for about 20 minutes, Dr. Sharp came and gave us some interesting information, and, among other things, denied the possibility of reincarnation. Then a man spoke through the trumpet in pure English, gave a name, and said he was, in earth life, a surgeon at Brighton. He declared that he knew me, but I have no recollection of him. Next came a Mr. W. 0. Shipman, a friend of Mr. Hodges, who identified himself, speaking in Yankee intonation and dialect, then my guide, with English accent, with whom I had a long chat. I asked her the names of one of my daughters, who was born on the anniversary of her death. The answer was correct. Q. What was I doing this morning? A. Writing notes of your investigation. Correct. Then you thought it was a bad day, and you would not go out, so you wrote letters. Correct. Who was the man you were talking to? I said it was Mr. Hodges, whom I had fetched from his office. An introduction then took place. Q. I understand from Dr. Sharp that you are in the sixth sphere? A. Yes. Sixth sphere, seventh realm. Q. How is my wife? A. She has received your letter from the East. I found afterwards that there had been some anxiety about the delay in the arrival of my first letter from New York, which had not reached home until a few days before this sitting. Then came Clytina, who spoke very clearly, but in rather a stilted way, to Mr. Hodges in pure English. It seemed to me that her formal pronunciation was due to her wish to make sure that she was understood.